information requirements for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted.
This is Cat Meow.
And this is Becky.
And we want to hang out with you.
The Development Committee will meet the third Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m.
We're traffic informed and
food motivated.
And we're seeking like-minded individuals who want to use their rad fundraising skills and talents to
support the station. Join us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Law for the People Convention from October 31st through the 4th at the Benson Hotel in Portland. Registration is now open for this five-day conference. Panels and workshops include Facing Fascism, What's the NLG's Role in Defending Resistance to Fascism? Movement Lawyering for Racial Justice. Disaster Capitalism, Colonialism, and Climate Change. What it means to do movement legal support in indigenous communities, and much more. Again, registration is now open for the Law for the People National Lawyers Guild Convention from October 31st through the 4th at the Benson Hotel, 309 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
Yes,
it is.
You are correct, sir.
I'm glad I'm correct on that, at least. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris, and the number to call is 231-8187. We have a guest, Lenny D., who's going to talk about a couple of ballot measures, I believe.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we should set the table here a little bit, though.
Okay, go ahead.
We're going to take each of the next 2 weeks to talk about the ballot measures that are appearing on the November ballot.
Unless, of course, Trump starts a war.
Right, yeah, unless something weird happens, which it's about even money right now.
Yeah, really.
All right. But so today we're going to look at the, there are three measures we're going to look at today. There's two sponsored by the City of Portland. The other is a metro regional ballot measure. So those are the three. The statewide stuff we're saving for next week.
Yeah, that is all very exciting, and I think people will want to call in. I think it's important to talk about this stuff. And I want to add one obvious thing. If you don't vote, you don't get to play. I mean, we'll take your call, but come on. Call your friends in every state. And if you feel like it, go to another state and help organize. I mean, this is really a serious election, even though the Democrats are wimpy and so on. I have to say that.
Okay. So we're not going to do this in numerical order.
No.
Today, just, you know, to be contrarian.
Yeah, because Lenny's here.
Lenny's here, and Lenny wants to speak primarily about the city's measure 26201.
Yeah, Lenny, we'll start. What the hell is that?
What the hell is that? 26-201 has been worked on for over 3.5 years by the Portland's leading social justice and environmental organizations. And the frame around this is the cities are trying to make a difference on climate change and economic inequality and don't have the resources to make a difference. One of the things we discovered, unfortunately, in the last presidential election is progressive voters are congregated in cities, and they don't get as much play in the national election. And so 187 mayors now have pledged nationally to try and get their cities to be 100% renewable, but they don't have the resources to make that happen. In Portland, the city has pledged to get to be 100% electricity renewable by 2035.
Too late.
Yes, well, that's another subject. 2050 for all energy. But there's no money behind it. So this coalition of now over 200 community organizations, faith leaders, and businesses are supporting the Clean Energy Initiative, which will bring in ballpark $30 million annually to weatherize and solarize Portland homes with a focus on low-income communities. job training for low-income communities, and green infrastructure. It's a model for how cities can respond to climate change and economic inequality. We've talked to a number of think tanks nationally that suggest that if we get this passed in Portland, it can pass in 25 other American cities. So it's a great opportunity for Portland to be a leader once again.
So what's the source of the revenue for this thing?
$30 million comes from a 1% business license surcharge on billion-dollar retail corporations operating in Portland. IKEA, Nordstrom, Gap, Banana Republic, the five big banks, groceries and medicine are exempt. Of the 120 or so corporations that will be affected, 45 have overseas tax havens, and we're not talking one or two. Bank of America has 105 overseas tax havens. Verizon has 71, Walgreens 43. So we can certainly get the 1% to pay another 1%.
Now, I want to talk about the nuts and bolts of this, just so people are clear. We're not talking about a tax on profits. We're talking about a 1% surcharge on revenues.
Correct.
Right. So what does that mean in layman's terms? Did I just explain it in layman's terms?
Well, you sort of did it in layman's terms.
Yeah. Right.
Well, one of the points I was making about the overseas tax havens is that these corporations play a shell game and get away with hiding their profits. So one of the reasons for going after gross revenues, they can't do that. And so that was really intentional.
So gross revenues.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So that's going to generate, obviously, 1% of gross revenues, a bigger figure than 1% of net profits.
Right. Right. Okay. So our ballpark is 30 million. Our ballpark estimate from the Department of Revenue is $30 million.
So if this passes, there will be a movement of money from those rich corporations to this program, which will train people in doing this kind of work and in those kinds of programs for essentially retrofitting largely.
Absolutely. And, you know, in the end, these corporations are going to benefit from this, because the reality is in some ways, it will put more money in the pockets of a lot of Portlanders, and they'll be spending money in these businesses as well. So even though Apple will be affected, the reality is that some people have some purchasing power they wouldn't have before. Maybe they'll buy their kid a computer. So this money will circulate back through the economy in very, very positive ways.
Conceptually and functionally, it's a lot like it's modeled after the New Deal in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah, apply a tax or a charge on the rich, use it to put people to work.
Absolutely.
In this case, the outcome is particularly desirable.
Absolutely.
Well, I have not seen any opposition ads. What's going to happen there?
Well, in the last 2 weeks, $200,000 has come in from Comcast, U.S. Bank, Amazon, Walmart, and others. So we're expecting a blitz at the end of the cycle. That's generally what these corporations do. So you can't really respond when they lay out their false claims.
Yeah, so the standard American pattern will be followed.
Absolutely, but we got great support out there, and so we're pretty confident we're gonna do well.
Well,
but we need everybody voting and telling their neighbors and friends.
Okay, I'm gonna let you be devil's advocate on your own thing. What is the weakness of this thing? Is there one?
I think we have to make sure this works well. If this is going to be a model for 25 other cities, not only do we need to pass it, but we need to make sure it works well. And so there can be some job training can be tricky. A lot of money historically has gone down the tubes that hasn't worked successfully for job training. So we need to stay on top of it and make sure it's working well. We've recently got endorsements from the building trades, which is a real breakthrough. It hasn't happened before. So the theoretical blue-green alliance, which has been hoped for a long period of time, hasn't really happened. And this is a first attempt at it, and this is a real breakthrough in terms of making
well,
stuff like that.
Well, will this
happen?
Also, it seems to me that logically it should also include the community colleges, for example, which are
Absolutely.
Trainers for those jobs.
Absolutely. And so they're interested in this as well.
So one of the things I have always thought is that one of the failures of organized labor is not to create a adequate workforce of people who are ready, who are job ready. And though they've tried, it hasn't been most effective. So this would also help that in a very significant way. Is that true?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things the unions are facing with is big retirement now, because the baby boomers are now retiring.
Yeah.
So they have a serious need for new qualified workers, and this is a great opportunity. I think one of the advantages of this as well is that because it's being led by social justice groups that, who are working in the community, they can go out and get their community engaged in this and make them aware of this and get them engaged in these job training programs. So I think it's a big opportunity in those ways as well.
Well, I'm looking at this thing and I'm thinking, what is there not to like about this? And I can't find, and from my own perspective, I find nothing wrong with it. It's obviously not going to hurt these large corporations. I mean, we're talking pennies for them.
The Portland Business Alliance, which is leading the opposition, doesn't seem to want to do anything about climate change. And so they've come out against the Jordan Cove project in Coos Bay, which is astonishing given how far we are from and why they got into that mess. But they wound up coming out against the Jordan Cove LNG facility, which is being built on the epicenter of the 9.0 earthquake, I might add.
Of course.
And they've come out against this. So clearly they don't, they're sort of following the Trump dictum that climate change is a hoax, because what other reason would they have for opposing it?
What do you say to allegations that this surcharge, this 1% surcharge on gross revenues, is going to be passed on to consumers?
Most of these national corporations, because they are national corporations, advertise nationally for pricing. So when you buy an iPad, you pay the same price in Raleigh as you do in San Antonio, Minneapolis, Denver, and Portland. When you buy a latte, the same is true all over the country. So they keep standard pricing because that's their model of how they advertise. That's their model of how they do business.
You don't see a vindictive backlash here, raising prices in Portland for having the temerity to levy this surcharge.
They don't do it. I mean, the reality is that this, every city has different pricing structures. And so and the reality is that these corporations keep standard pricing because they need to advertise nationally. So as I said earlier, you pay the same in all these cities for all these standardized pricing because of that.
Well, aren't you going to hurt the big corporations? I mean, gee. I worry about them.
Well, we've gotten support from Better Business Portland, which is a lot of the tech firms, the Main Street Alliance, which is a lot of the small business in town. So Portland business sees this as a boon for our economy.
I can see how it would be. I mean, here you are creating a set of skilled workers, creating a set of projects which in the long run, or even in the short run, make work for lots of people.
Absolutely. I think when Abe was talking earlier about a model for a 21st century of the New Deal, I think he's hit the he's exactly right.
All right, I want to remind people, 231-8187. I don't know if we have any callers yet. Are people hanging back? I'm sorry, you were going to say something.
Also, if people don't want to call, they can write into the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, or tweet. You can tweet at us. At HonestAbe72.
Is there a sound effect we could use for tweeting?
Oh, there is, but we're not going to.
Oh.
Because we're better than that, Joe.
We're better than that.
We're better than that.
We're better than that, folks. All right.
Another argument against... go ahead.
No.
Another argument
against
this measure, 26201, is that it will make an already expensive city even more expensive to live in. What is your take on that?
I think actually just the opposite. It'll put money in people's pockets who can't afford other things. So the largest reason that people take out payday loans is because of utility bills. So if we focus this on low-income communities, they're going to have more money in their pockets. Before the Trump administration took it down, there was a stat on a Department of Energy website: for every dollar spent on weatherization, $4.25 comes back in increased purchasing power and wealth for the families that have that, and only $1.78 of that $4.25 is actually on energy bills. So families save money on medical costs. Families save money on kids being out of school for far less times, so that they don't have to take off from work as a result of that. So there's huge economic benefits here that will reverberate through the community. So rather than increasing the expense of Portland, it's going to be a big economic boon for Portland. And one of the things, I mean, the economy is cyclical. So one of the things that eventually is going to happen is there's going to be a downturn in our economy. And the fact that this money is coming in annually means that this Portland will be in a much better shape to handle the latest recession that was eventually hit here.
So now, again, how much money is projected to come to Portland?
The ballpark is $30 million.
Okay, that's a lot of money.
That is.
How do I get my share?
You can't apply for this. Only...
Wait, what?
Yes, that's right. So no individual can apply for it. So an example of a project that might happen, and I'm just, you know, I'm not saying this is going to happen, is that it'll be project-based. So, for example, Rose Community Development Corporation has been working in Lentz for a long period of time.
Right.
They may put a proposal into the commission that will manage this money that they want to weatherize Lentz over a five-year period. And Rose might work with Green Hammer or Walsh Construction or another firm to do the work, and Rose would be on the ground doing the work, talking to the neighbors, talking to the community, getting them to engage in this. So it would be a project-based opportunities.
So if I understand this correctly, it will take a tiny amount of money from the huge corporations. It will create a job training and jobs situation. It will reduce the energy output overall in the face of growing climate change.
Right.
So what's not to like?
Well, it's funny when people don't want to deal with the problems that we have, instead of blaming the people that are trying to fix problems. And unfortunately, that's all too frequent with the Portland Business Alliance.
I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, and that was the Blue-Green Alliance that you spoke of. The fact that the building trade associations, I'm not sure which ones exactly, have come out in support of this measure. To me, that seems a natural pairing, right? Of course, public money that's spent on energy improvements and upgrading clean energy infrastructure, of course that's going to employ people in the building industry. It makes perfect sense. Why do you think it's taken so long for them to bridge that conceptual gap?
One, I think there hasn't been a real source of funding. So as I said, when I talked about this being a model for other cities, the reality is there hasn't been a consistent source of money that could build these kind of projects. So it's sort of been a myth that we're going to create this Blue-Green Alliance when there isn't funding to do this kind of transformative work. And the other reason, you know, is that we've been at loggerheads on certain issues, and we're at loggerheads, frankly, on the Coos Bay Jordan Cove one, where every major environmental group is opposed to this, and a lot of the unions are in favor because it provides more jobs. So eventually, I think as we build this new economy and putting jobs through fossil fuel industry is going to be less and less an important factor for the unions. I think we can build this alliance into a much stronger grouping that can really make a difference in our community.
So this is a Portland measure.
This is a Portland measure.
And it's 26201?
26-201.
Yeah. I want to add, I mean, people, you have to carefully read the material that you're getting from the government, and I would recommend the League of Women Voters pamphlets,
right,
to understand these measures. A lot of them are, I would almost say, deliberately confusing, but this one's pretty clear, and I think that this is something, I mean, the reason why I asked you here was because it's something I really personally support. I mean, it's just, I can't see a downside. I really can't, but I'm sure there are people who want to call in and tell us they might not like it or something, or not. Because on account of how I don't see a lot of lights lighting up. So we're going to just get to talk, huh?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
All right then. So that sounds like a solid yes from all three of us.
Oh, I
on 26201.
No, there's no question about it. I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, it really is not going to impact on those corporations in any significant way. That's number one. So if you're pro-capitalist, there's nothing wrong with it. If you're anti-capitalist, there's everything good with it. So I think it should pass. Now, I know that they're going to flood us with lying ads. Their technique, as you say, is always at the last minute to put in a bunch of creepy ads. And by the time you're ready to get the money together to oppose it, there's already been an election.
Right. We're expecting that. We'll just have to see how, you know, what kind of lies they throw out there. But
yeah, but I assume you're kind of knowing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay,
yep, so but we got a great grassroots effort out there. We're knocking on lots of doors, making lots of phone calls. Everybody's lots of groups are helping, so we can really make a difference here.
That's good. And I want to note something here, that this is the concept that underlies this whole proposition, taxing the wealthy, particular corporations, and then investing that money in infrastructure repair and job training. As I mentioned earlier, this is straight out of the New Deal playbook. And this is something that progressives have been advocating for literally for years. And it's met with resistance at every turn. And we've seen a gradual trend away from this sort of taxation at the national level and at the state level as well. And I think it's indicative of just how successful that multi-decade campaign by conservatives against this sort of thing, against the notion that government could be an affirmative and positive presence in people's economic and personal lives. They've been incredibly successful at challenging that notion. And so I think it's indicative of where we are, that it's taking till 2018 for Portland to put a measure like this on the ballot and have a good chance of it achieving victory. It's a small step back in the right direction.
Right. That's a great point, Abe. And it was really interesting. I mean, we've been working on this for over 3 years now. And when we first started, there was resistance in the liberal community about this because they're so nervous about fighting the corporations. And it took a long time for us to build this coalition together, because a lot of people were very nervous about it, frankly, because it's been so long since we've made this fight and made along those lines. So I think you've got a great point here, Abe.
And the larger point, I think, is that this model can be applied virtually anywhere.
Right.
We can tax large corporations and the wealthy, and we can put people to work repairing bridges. We can put people to work, building solar farms. And I imagine some of that's going to happen as a result of this measure.
Right.
We can put people to work installing fiber optic networks around the state. I mean, the list of good things that we can do, if only the very wealthy were taxed just a little bit more, it's virtually endless.
Right. I mean, there's so many regrets about the Obama administration, but one of the strongest regrets I have is they didn't do a WPA project when they first got
in there.
I mean, that was enormous opportunity to make people feel that government has value and that they can improve their lives. Because there's lots of government programs, but it's a submerged state. People aren't aware that they exist. But creating a jobs program that really impacts people and makes a really difference in their lives would be pretty fabulous.
I agree. I think that was one of the great missed opportunities of the Obama administration. His stimulus bill went some distance, towards achieving that end, but not nowhere near far enough.
Right. Absolutely.
But I think we got a few callers. Who do we got?
We do.
Edie, you're on the air.
Thank you so much. One of the other advantages of the Portland Clean Energy Initiative is that when we have the earthquakes, the methane gas explosion several blocks at a time, when we have the oil bomb train explosions or any of these other issues come up, the electrical system for PGE and PacifiCorp will fail. And because the way it's set up, it will not be able to be brought back up for several weeks for us. But when we have decentralized solar and we have democratized control of our power, as this will allow, and especially in those very areas that would be least likely to have the power and most needing to have it for medical devices, etc., then this is a way to make it safer for everyone. Whether or not you care about low-income, disabled, elderly people, color, formerly incarcerated, or over-policed, who are the most harmed by our society, and with this will do something to mitigate and move towards justice, even if you don't care about them, this will make it safer for everyone and better for the economy and a better reason for folks to stay here, live here, and continue here. And another way that it helps out is that by PSEF also encourages the main part of our community security, and the benefits are not from paid workers but volunteers, and people can volunteer when they're not having to work 3-4 jobs to pay for their housing and their energy, et cetera. And so being healthier because they don't have hypothermia or heat sinks, because they have insulation and they have rooftop solar and they have healthy green food locally, that means that they then are not taking up our tax dollars for ambulance or emergency room, that they're more able to volunteer, and we have a continuity, we have a sense of caring in our neighborhoods, we know each other, and it reduces depression, despair, alienation, and crime. So there's many more opportunities that are blessing us if we pass Portland Clean Energy Initiative 26201.
Well, I want to thank you for the call.
Very well said.
Yeah, it's well put, and I certainly agree with you, and I appreciate the call. We have other people, and maybe somebody who would like to.
Thanks for the call. Either of you want to comment on that before we?
I think it's obvious. I think what she said is true. I don't know what else to say. What do you want to say?
Well, there's an energy storage component to it. So, I mean, one of the stats, I don't have it right in front of me right now, is that low-income communities don't have access to energy storage in crisis situations. So there is an energy storage component of this.
What is energy storage?
So in other words, you have...
batteries?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, so if there's a crisis, communities have access to energy.
That really does make sense. I mean, one of the things we know in Oregon is we're going to have a big one,
right,
as they say, not to mention the onrushing climate change that is going to make it very wet everywhere and warm. So, you know, these are all things that are, in the larger sense, preparation to at least embrace the need for change in the reality of the world we're living in, regardless of your politics, actually.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Tony is next. Good morning. Are you there?
Tony?
Okay, well, we'll come back to Tony if we can.
Okay.
All right, so I think we're ready to move on to another.
I think we'll move on, and unless somebody or anybody can interrupt and bring this issue up or tell us how much they hate it or love it.
All right, well, before
you stick around, Lenny.
All right.
Before we do move around, I should say this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on 90.7 KBOO FM. On your radio dial, if you're listening on one of the internet tubes, it's KBOO.FM.
There are no tubes.
Former Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska said that the internet was like a series of tubes.
Oh, well, that was back in the day of radio.
Yeah, I know. I always thought that was a really funny analogy.
Well, the best, of course, the best sound systems are tube-based.
But we digress.
Oh, sorry.
All right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, alternative radio author and activist Eric Holt Jimenez outlined strategies to push back against the corporate food regime. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Stage and Studio features the U.S. premiere of Hurl as the season opener of the Corrib Theater.
Is that in, like, vomiting?
It's Hurl in all caps, so I really don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
You'll have to tune in at 11 for Stage and Studio. At 11:30, Art Focus talks to artists, curators, and critics. All of these programs and more are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member of KBOO, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. It's just that easy.
Well, it's pretty easy.
Yeah, it really is.
Okay, so...
I understand we have Tony back. Good morning.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very well.
Yeah, I have a comment about the gross receipts tax, or actually it's a question.
Okay.
So is this... is the structure of this similar to what the state tried to pass, you know, 2 years ago?
It's a good question. So 97, that was measure 97. And
right, yeah.
It's different in some pretty fundamental ways. They had a very complicated formula, which potentially had multiple taxation going on as products go through the cycle, so it could there were potentially multiple taxing levels. That doesn't exist in this one. Measure 97 did not exempt groceries and medicine. Ours exempts groceries and medicine. Measure 97, because of its hit a lot of local businesses, for example, Powell's will not be affected by this.
Wait, Powell's won't be affected?
Will not be affected.
People like that.
Yeah, but Powell's is a great place, and they're not a billion-dollar corporation, so we're really only hitting a very small... Measure 97 hit 2,000 corporations, ours hits 120, and most importantly, Measure 97 won in Portland, even with all that, with 61% of the vote. So we've got a great chance of winning this in Portland.
Yeah, no, that clarifies that. And my question is, if this passes in Portland, does that just preempt anything like this ever going to the state again? because I think it's an excellent way to get money from corporations, but I'm concerned that if it passes here, it will never pass on a statewide.
No, and actually, just the opposite is true. So we've gotten endorsements from 9 Portland area state leaders, including the Speaker of the House, Tina Kotick, and they're all working very hard on energy and on income reform, including some version of 97, some kind of receipts tax that would go statewide. And if we win this in Portland, it's an example that this, if written correctly, citizens are in favor of taxing corporations. So it's actually just the opposite. And they're very excited about the possibility of this being an example of how citizens can say, yes, we really need to tax these corporations.
Well, I think you may have changed my vote on this. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Tony.
Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Bye. Yeah.
Okay, shall we move along?
I think we should move along.
Okay, so we're going to skip now to measure 26200. I mentioned earlier we're not going in numerical order.
Yeah, let's be clear. We're not going in numerical order, and we're not covering state measures at this point.
No, that's going to be next week. Measure 26200 is a City of Portland initiative that amends the city charter to limit campaign contributions and expenditures and to mandate the source of campaign contributions. So basically, this is going to put a cap on how much individuals and groups are able to donate to political campaigns, and also require that the ultimate source of those funds be disclosed.
Why interferes with my freedom as a rich person?
Yeah, too bad.
Oh,
I'm sorry. This is, in my mind, the very definition of a good government initiative.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Seriously, yes.
Yeah, the scourge of money in politics is well documented. I don't think we need to go into too much detail on this, and this directly addresses that. No more than $500 from individuals or political committees will be allowed under this measure, and no more than a $5,000 loan balance can be maintained by a candidate.
But I won't be able to buy an election.
That's correct.
Oh.
That's the point.
Oh.
Yeah.
I see.
Lenny, what's your take on this?
Oh, I love it. You know, a version of this passed in Multnomah County with something like 85% of the vote. So Portlanders definitely want campaign limits. The fundamental issue is going to be, after it passes, how the courts are going to view this, and that continues to be...
The Kavanaugh Court?
Well, also the Oregon courts, frankly.
Oh, yes.
So the judge in Multnomah County has, and this is being challenged, but the judge in Multnomah County ruled after it passed, said that it violated campaign spending laws, and so now this is being appealed. So that's the big question, is how the courts are going to view this.
Well, I think it on the face of it and reasonably, this is a very good measure.
Oh, absolutely. We need this all over the country. And so,
yeah, I would agree.
And it was interesting enough when we were fighting the Pembina natural gas plant that we eventually defeated in Portland, I started looking at who was funding the city council members' races and who was funding them. And, you know, I've been around Portland a long time. I know lots of people. And as I'm going through the list of who's funding the city council people, I don't know a soul, because it's all people that have an interest in policy, because they can, their business or their company can do better. And they're the ones that are funding the city council races. And that's not what we need in Portland.
Yeah, I think this is a very important measure. Again, I want to emphasize, you need to very carefully read the voter pamphlet, and you need to read the League of Women Voters information guide. These are your responsibility, and then, whether or not you've read them, it's your responsibility to vote. Not voting is tantamount to letting proto-fascism win. And I'm serious. I'm not exaggerating. This is a very, very important election, both nationally and locally.
You know, I get into these arguments with friends of mine who are obsessed with the Trump voters and how you talk to the Trump voters. And I tell them, 40% of the country didn't vote. We need to focus on the 40% of the country that didn't vote, not trying to persuade 2% of the Trump voters to come back to being Democrats. That's the big audience. If we get a lot more people voting, we're going to win this thing.
Yeah, and I want to add, I mean, the important thing here in this election is to get is to do serious damage to what I consider almost a drive toward fascism that's unacknowledged but very real. And to say, well, the Democrats, they are. They're not perfect. They're far from it. In fact, I think the election in 2016 was bungled in all kinds of levels.
Absolutely.
But the fact of the matter is you have to make sure that you stop the most aggressive, most fascist tendencies in the culture, or you're going to get nowhere.
You know, one of the questions I'm asking friends of mine, because a bunch of my friends are now retired, are we willing to go to the Rust Belt states in 2020? Are we willing to work in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Ohio, Pennsylvania to get those states to turn blue? Because we are, I mean, Trump is, you know, some version of Mussolini here. And if we that's the reality of what we're facing.
He's much more Mussolini than Hitler, isn't he?
Yeah,
more Mussolini, especially the hand gestures. And
yes,
stuff.
And the chin.
Yeah, the chin.
And we need to step up big time for ourselves and for our children and grandchildren. So this is this will be a watershed election in 2020. And are we willing to make ourselves a little more uncomfortable and go to places that we may not want to spend that much time in? But
well, we can learn and make new friends.
Absolutely, yep. I think it'll be fun.
As I used to learn in kindergarten.
Lenny, I think you hit something right on the head a few minutes ago when you said that it's a waste of time to try to go after that 2% or however much of the electorate, shifted Trump in the last election. I agree with you. I think that's a total waste of time. Progressives are much better served by trying to marshal those who didn't bother to show up last time and by vigorously opposing all the underhanded and, frankly, un-American efforts underway right now to make sure the wrong sorts of people don't show up to vote. And by wrong sorts of people, I mean people with darker skin tones who represent an existential threat to scared white people. But here's why I think that the Democratic Party in particular still tends to obsess over that 2% is because the only two demographic groups who voted, gave majority support to Donald Trump in 2016 were white men and white women. And I still think there's a lingering perception that in order for a political movement to be legitimate, it needs to enjoy the support of white men. That's the stamp of political legitimacy in the United States, historically. But frankly, the math does not bear that out. The demographic realities of the United States do not bear that out. If white men and white women are going to continue to support a guy like Donald Trump, I say let them. Progressives are better served by going after other sections of the electorate.
And I don't think, I understand and I agree with you in large part, but I don't think I would cast it in such a racial concern approach. I think the problem is that a lot of people are so made so cynical, and that's not an accident, this is intentional, made so cynical about the electoral process that they just have walked away from it. And now they need to understand the cards are dealt. It's a heavy hand. If you lose, you really lose. If you win, you really win. And you can't afford to be picky. Can't be picky now. You've got to move against fascism.
But I think Abe's got an interesting point here, because I think there's a contradiction inside the Democratic Party in that its money comes from wealthy white people, and at the same time, its base is essentially not white. And so that and wants increased taxation on wealthy people, and that contradiction inside the Democratic Party is yet to be resolved. So the money that's coming in from the Democratic Party is socially liberal but economically conservative, and the base of the party is both socially liberal and economically liberal. And that contradiction is yet to be resolved inside the Democratic Party, which is why they have no platform to speak of in terms of jobs, creating a new economy, building the green-blue alliance. All those things are, Democratic Party has no positions on this stuff, because that contradiction is unresolved inside the Democratic Party.
Well, I agree. I mean, even Obama, who everybody found charming and seemed to be a good guy, but was very weak on various areas, which we tend to try to ignore. I mean, that was where he was stuck, I think.
Absolutely. And the Democratic Party is stuck there right now.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program, 90.7 KBOO. We'd love to hear your opinions on both the micro and the macro aspects of this conversation. 503-231-8187. Right now, we're talking about Measure 26200 on the November ballot, the City of Portland Initiative, limiting campaign contributions and campaign expenditures for candidates for city office. I think all three of us are unanimous in our support for this particular
measure. I mean, it's obvious. Yep. It's just obvious.
It is. And Joe, you mentioned earlier the inherent value in carefully reading the voters pamphlet.
Yeah.
I want to point to some of that inherent value right now.
Go ahead.
There's an argument.
some funny stuff is in there.
There's some very funny stuff. This is an argument in opposition to Measure 26200. Oregon elections are rigged by big money. Let's keep it that way. Power to the people. The best people. The best people are the ones with the most money. Money is speech. The best speech. Don't let voters spoil our rigged system.
Who did that?
Guy by the name of Dan Meek.
Oh, Dan Meek. I know Dan Meek. He's a great guy.
All of the statements in favor of Measure 26200 are fake news. Committee of the best people with the best words provided this argument in opposition.
I like Dan Meek. He was one of the leaders in the opposition to the nuclear power plant.
Right. That's true.
But, you know, one of the interesting aspects of coming back to the question about the political party. The political party are not pushing this. This is citizens pushing this.
Right.
So it's not, Democratic Party is not pushing this initiative. The Republican Party is not pushing this initiative.
Yeah, they're staying well away.
Huh?
They're staying well away.
They are staying well, they are frankly nervous about it. Because they're used to doing business the way it has been, where their money comes from certain places, and they run this sort of an inside game.
Absolutely true, and I have no reason to support either party in this aspect.
Yes, I think,
Okay, well, I think we got some callers.
Mariah, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a little thing I wanted to add to your conversation about corporations and stuff, but it's in the form of a short poem. Is that okay?
It's absolutely short.
Okay, yeah. Go
fact,
for
we
it.
Welcome any and all poetic submissions to the Abe and Joe Show. Go ahead.
Okay, so here goes. Corporations are not people, so why should they be allowed to control our democracy? We vote for our Congress and our senators, too. They're supposed to represent me and you, but that's not how it is. Corporations are king, and now they control most everything. Justice for all is what we've been taught, but none of those banksters have been charged nor caught, nor sent to prison where they should rot. They stole billions for millions the whole world round, caused chaos and misery in countries and town, and their punishment for their greedy deeds, millions in bonuses they say they need. So now we the people are standing to fight, coming together to take back our rights. Stand up and be counted, take action today, because sitting on the couch ain't going to make this mess go away. So vote with your dollars, your voice, and your feet, and the victory of we the people will be so sweet.
That's great.
Bravo. Awesome. Bravo.
We like that. Woo! We really like that. And I'm not gonna grace you all with my singing of The Banks Are Made of Marble.
Thank you. Yes, hey, well, thank you for that. That was fantastic.
Okay.
We eagerly you. Await Bye. Your next album. All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. So shall we move on to the next measure? I think we should.
What is the next measure?
This is a metro measure. Metro being the regional government that administers certain aspects of civic life in Washington.
Clackers, I want to warn people, this pamphlet, this voters pamphlet thing is full of stuff, and you may want to not look through it carefully, but you've got to. People.
Yeah, no, read it.
Read it.
Yeah. Okay, so what the Measure 26199 is the one we're talking about.
Okay.
This is going to authorize bonds to be issued to fund affordable housing in Washington, Clackamas, and Multnomah counties. Now, what's different about this bond measure compared to previous ones is that these bonds would be issued by Metro, the regional governing authority, not by the city, not by the county, not by the state.
Okay.
I think it's a good idea. Affordable housing is something that affects the entire region, and I think it makes sense to address this on a geographic regional level.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I am not pleased by seeing, this is an aesthetic question for me as well as a question of morality and health. I do not like to see lots of people sleeping on the sidewalk. I do not like the idea of stumbling across other people's defecations, etc. This is all really happening, and it's happening because people don't have a place to live. And at least the city is recognizing the problem. I just noticed that the highway department in Oregon has put a bunch of boulders up in several of the camping locations to keep people from camping in those spots. I don't think that's a great solution. I think that the great solution is to build housing. I think the great solution is to have services. I think caring for people is mandated in every faith. It's mandated in every sense of morality. And it ought to be a responsibility of us, we, the people.
And while public indebtedness, is always something that should be approached with caution, issuing bonds, particularly bonds for capital construction, it's a pretty low-risk way of achieving an end.
At the worst, you end up with a building.
Yeah. Right. I see some synergies here between this measure and the Green Building Initiative we talked about earlier.
There are definitely some synergies. One of the interesting aspects of this, there was a great interview with Ed Blackburn, who retired last year from Central City Concern. And Central City Concern has been doing fabulous work for a long period of time and dealing with the homeless question. And Ed talked about three policies that were instituted during the Reagan administration that created the situation we have today. Because when he first started, Old Town was your traditional wino district, which every city had, and the homeless question was not all through the entire city. So he talked about three Reagan policies. One, war on drugs. Two, the feds getting out of housing, which was important aspect that people don't recognize. And three was the emptying of the mental health institutions without anything to replace it. He said those three policies put under Reagan had dramatically changed the composition of the homeless situation and expanded it in ways that we're now feeling today.
I absolutely agree with that, but I would add another one, which is that we really don't have free education in practical skills or even in intellectual skills. Our universities and our community colleges can be, and sometimes are, free, and they should be. And it's a logical thing to do because it pays off in the long run.
When I went to college, I paid $28 a term.
Where was that?
City College in New York.
Oh, I went there for a while. Yeah, it's a great place.
Yeah, $28 a term. Could you imagine that today?
No.
Oh, I could imagine it.
You can imagine it, but it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Who do we have? Don, good morning.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I've been watching the issues of homelessness for a long time, and I'm a little suspicious of some folks who want to make a big issue out of it rather than those who want to work at it in an intelligent and compassionate way, dealing with the homeless people as actual resources and leaders in this. Instead, we're going to get a whole bunch of facility-building detention centers and, high capital funding to deal with policing the homeless.
I don't know, folks.
The solution to housing is to treat it as a utility rather than a commodity. And when we talk about affordable housing things, we've got to stop talking about building equity for people to use as their bank account in their house. That's the whole thing wrong with this. Gentrification is because you have these drives to make housing prices rise. They shouldn't. They should be stable as a utility. And the way you handle that is you make every vacant unit taxed at a full rate of occupancy.
Okay, if I understand you correctly, I think there's some merit in your argument about how a fundamental change in the way we view housing. You're saying view it as a utility like power rather than as a commodity upon which there is constant pressure exercised to raise prices. But I want to double back to something you mentioned early on. You talked about this ballot measure mandating the construction of detention centers. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I'm looking at is when you see Nate Buehler coming on and saying, hey, you notice the homeless people on the street, like he's going to do something about it. When you hear, Loretta saying that she's going to have a commission established to look at the homeless issue Come on. We know what we need to be doing, and it's a much more dignified approach to dealing with the homeless people as the people who can solve this problem with us if we'll work with them. But when you want to put them in facilities, when you want the police to start busting them off of the city streets and doing all that tactic, and that's your idea of what's to do with homelessness, I think that has to be understood when we hear this rhetoric.
Well, I think you're right. So in that
sense. We're talking about fundamental land use issues. This goes way back, and it's true for commercial as well. Bill de Blasio in New York, Juan Gonzalez's book called Gotham, is all about how he has drawn the line against developers because the city needs to reclaim its land for the people. And that's the same thing here. You see all this money development ruining Portland with stuff that we're not going to be able to use well in the next decade. I mean, it's just badly planned, badly done, and it's all high capital driven because we can't stop the people who are bribing the politicians. That's why you got to stop this thing the way you guys are doing it. I love the discussion so far. I mean, really, you've been right on everything. I just want to make sure that on this one, we are talking about treating humanely the people who are homeless rather than seeing them as a problem that we're going to deal with through the usual capitalism.
I think you're right, and I think it is inevitable, unfortunately, that we look at it the way you find it distasteful. I think ironically, it has more to do with people's aesthetics than it does with the horror of being homeless. And I think that speaks a lot to the way in which our society perceives almost every problem. And I wanted to thank you for the call.
Well, the other thing is they're not a higher percentage of mentally ill. They're just people who are out of luck economically.
Right. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. All right. Who's next, Ray? Joan, good morning.
Hi there.
Hi.
Am I on?
You are.
Radio? Yes.
Be careful.
Okay. I agree that about the homeless. I was homeless myself once, and I am neither an alcoholic or a person with a drug problem. I just was out of work, and of course now I am a taxpaying citizen of Portland. And I think we all have to consider the governor's race extremely important. That's the main comment I want to make.
Okay, I appreciate the comment. I can't find any reason to disagree with it.
Right. I mean, people really, at this point, I think we need a nice, if not totally progressive, a liberal-minded fence around Oregon. Oregon's been bought and sold for long enough, and we really need to keep it away from the Republicans. I guess I can say that because...
No, you can say that. We can't say that, but you can say that.
Yeah, you can, but I can right now, and I think people should really consider the governor's race and go out there and vote for the right person.
Okay, thank you very much for that call.
Yeah, excellent point. Thanks. Who's next? Stuart, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to talk about the affordable housing thing. I don't know if this is going to be just a stopgap measure or something that will take effect going forward, but something we should look at is what's happening in Costa Rica, where... basically, they've eliminated a lot of the homeless by $10,000 grants. It doesn't sound like a lot by our standards, but it's enough to buy a basic house with the proviso, and I wish I knew more about this, but that the recipient eventually pay it back, which, somehow would...
Well, I think there's both sweat equity and money equity to pay it back in the Costa Rican situation. I really don't know enough about it to be sure.
Yeah, and I just impulsively thought I would just weigh in to...
No, it's good.
Posit it as a possibility in the future.
Stuart, the fundamental contradiction we have here is that this is a social problem and we're trying to deal with it with market solutions. And the market controls housing, and the two inevitably don't work together. And it's trying to put a triangle into a round hole. It just doesn't work. So we're working on the edges of the problem because the two don't inherently don't work together. And until that contradiction gets dealt with, we've got we're going to be constantly working around the edges of the fundamental.
And I have to add, this is a fundamental contradiction of capitalism. It can't be ignored or brushed under the bed, because it's very real and it's becoming more and more obviously real.
Absolutely.
Anyway, do you have another comment?
No.
Okay, thank you for the call.
Great show.
All right, thanks very much. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. This has been a good talk today, I think.
I think so. I think we definitely should do ballot measures next week as well. We haven't gotten through all these, have we?
Oh, that was the third, yeah.
We did it.
Through them.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Yes, to recap.
Yes.
The Metro ballot measure, Measure 26-199, that allows Metro to issue bonds to construct affordable housing.
Why not?
We are voting yes on that.
Okay.
Measure 26-200, which caps campaign expenditures for city offices.
Obviously a good idea.
Or campaign contributions and expenditures, I should say.
Really?
We are recommending a yes vote on that. And finally, Measure 26-201, the Portland Green Energy Bill, we are also
supporting
it. Yes,
yeah, no, yeah. These are all these are kind of obvious. None of us know what weird arguments will be put in at the last minute to dissuade the public. Don't be fooled by that stuff. Carefully read the measures, carefully read what they do, carefully consider them. The two sources that you can trust, though both are opinion filled, the League of Women Voters, Voters Guide, which you can get for free at most libraries and elsewhere, and, of course, the voter's pamphlet. Likewise, you can get it, and it should be in the mail to you if you're a registered voter. And remember, it's easy to be a voter in Oregon because we have the motor voter law.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's no excuse. No excuse.
We had a previous caller ask the question, a very broad question, about what is this bond measure, the Metro Affordable Housing Bond Measure, is that a stopgap? And I think the answer to that is yes. The homelessness crisis is a systemic problem.
Right.
It derives from inherent inequities in the capitalist system. We hear statements from pro-business, pro-capitalist folks saying, well, poverty is simply inevitable. But I think that's false. Poverty, as we see it, particularly homelessness, is a byproduct of modern industrial capitalism. And I think to eradicate it in any long-term and meaningful way, it's going to require some very hard decisions about some systemic problems with our economic system. So in that regard, yes, this measure is a stopgap, but I think one that is necessary nonetheless.
Yeah, and I think we have to also see all of this in the context of the global changing climate. I mean, we're going to be facing some really serious challenges in the next couple of years. And if we don't begin to think systemically, if we don't begin to think about things logically to build a better world, we're going to get a much worse world.
Worser, yes.
Worser. That's another word I would never use, of course.
Oh, we got one more call, it appears. Shantae, I hope I said that correctly. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you recap? I didn't get to tune in until like 8:35. Can you recap the 103, 104, 105 opinions of that I would value opinions that have been garnered on what to do? Because I will thank you for also telling us that the League of Women Voters pamphlet is available at the library. I'll go there today. But I don't know the others. They're so confusing.
We haven't talked about the statewide initiatives yet. We're going to dedicate next week's show to doing just that. So you haven't missed it.
You didn't miss anything. But the ones we talked about are very important. And we're saying yes, I believe, on all three, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tune in next week. We'll be able to answer those questions for you. All right.
Okay.
We have a comment to the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, from Rebecca, who writes, you all mentioned the outlandish argument in opposition to Measure 26-200 from Dan Meek, which we did. It was very funny.
Yes.
But interestingly, the same Dan Meek has a well-stated argument in favor for the same measure. Is this reverse psychology? Seems like the opposition statement is solidly tongue-in-cheek. Yes, it absolutely
is. It is absolutely tongue-in-cheek, and it is very funny.
Yeah, over-the-top satire to make a point, and it's well done. Kudos to you, Mr. Meek. So
I like Dan.
Yeah, I did too. Well, Lenny, I want to thank you for coming on our program today.
A pleasure to see you
guys. It's been a great conversation.
Yes.
And thank you to everybody who's called in. Please do take the time to read the voter's pamphlet. It's worth it.
It really is. And it's tedious, I know, but it's really worth it. And by the way, don't be fooled. There's a lot of lies in there as well, so you have to use your mind in it. It's a good intellectual exercise.
But it's a regional one, so it looks thick. But the reality is, you're not going to be Fairview is in there, Lake Oswego's in there, a bunch of stuff that you're not going to have to deal with. So it's not as much reading as Joe is letting on here.
Well, it's true, and then there's judges, and who knows.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we will be back at you next week.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on KBOO, next on Alternative Radio, author and activist Eric Holt Jimenez outlines strategies to push back against the corporate food regime. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Stage and Studio features the U.S. premiere of Hurl as the season opener of the Korob Theater. And at 11:30, Art Focus talks to artists, curators, and critics.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Food for the Soul on Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Tiffany Center in Portland. Food for the Soul is a potluck in the park benefit and will feature performances by Tom Grant, Michael Allen Harrison, Norman Sylvester, Shelley Rudolph, and Julia McKay. Potluck in the Park has been serving weekly meals every Sunday to anyone in need since 1991. Again, that's Food for the Soul on Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Tiffany Center, 1410 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by listener members and support from Portland's Saturday Market. 45 years of handmade arts and crafts, freshly